From Colorado Public Radio, I'm Ryan Warner, and this is Colorado Matters. Back in 2003, reporter Diana Shemo covered the sexual assault scandal at the U.S. Air Force Academy for the New York Times. Several years later, she returned to the Colorado Springs campus for an in-depth look at the institution through the eyes of a group of freshmen. Shemo followed the students from their first hours at the academy as they leave their families and their civilian lives behind through the grueling weeks of basic training to the moment at the end of the year when they are finally accepted as fully trained cadets. Her recently published account is called Skies to Conquer, A Year Inside the Air Force Academy. The students she writes about in the book just graduated. Diana, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
You followed this group of first-year students known as Dooleys. Tell me about two of them, David Urban and Rhonda Meeker. And maybe tell me a little bit where the term Dooley comes from.
Well, Dooley is actually from the ancient Greek word for slaves, which is doulos, and that gives you a good idea of the status that they don't enjoy their first year as cadets. The idea at the academy is that for the first year they are learning to follow, and then after that, to lead. And so that first year is really about crushing the identities that they bring in with them, and hence the name, Dooley. The two cadets that you're asking about are David Urban, who was brought up one of 10 children, homeschooled, Texas, father a rocket scientist, and Rhonda Meeker, who is a product of the junior ROTC in her high school, and she comes in really roaring to fight. She chose the Air Force Academy because she thought this offered her the best chance of seeing combat if she was seeing it through a cockpit, and she just, I think, had a very troubled childhood and was looking for a place to have a sense of belonging, to something larger than herself.
You ask Rhonda Meeker what kind of plane she might like to fly, and her answer is anything that shoots.
Right, exactly. And that's sort of actually a good description of her first year and how she sort of rushes out of the gate headlong into the process.
And David Urban is, as you mentioned, one of 10 children, homeschooled. He really was drawn by the free tuition.
Exactly. But you know what? Actually, that is a big draw for so many cadets. But with 10 kids, you can see how it was probably an even bigger factor in his family.
The new students arrive at the Air Force Academy with their families in many cases. They sort of check in. And there's a scene you describe where they get on a bus and they leave the sort of the view of the parents. Things are really getting underway. And it's such a stark scene for me. Will you describe it a little bit?
Surely. They leave their parents as they're getting on the bus. The upperclassmen are telling them, say goodbye to your parents. They took all this trouble. Say bye to your moms and dads. And it's really a super sweet moment. The cadets turn around. They sort of sheepishly wave. The doors close. The bus leaves. And as soon as it turns the first corner, it's like hellfire and brimstone. The upperclassmen just converge on them and start shouting, you know, hands to your sides, sit up straight, wipe that smile off your face. And they sort of come down on them like a ton of bricks. And the cadets are just shocked.
And minutes into their experience at the academy, one of them just leaves. One of them's like, this is not for me. Bye-bye.
Exactly. There's one woman who the upperclassmen are called cadre who are doing this. They actually personalize everything and they say, if you choose the path of mediocrity, do not get off the bus. And then the bus stops and everybody jogs off. And there was this one woman who just got the fear of God in her and she just said, I am not getting off. And she turned around and went right back to Doolittle Hall.
And in fact, you describe freshman year at the academy as, quote, a crucible for the training of warriors, a campaign that begins with war on the individual, an internal battle to erase the ego and create a new group identity. Tell me a little bit about how that is accomplished, the breakdown of the individual.
Well, basically they're showering them from the moment they come in with orders and telling them whatever they knew how to do or thought they knew how to do doesn't stand here in this new world. They are telling them how to stand, how to walk, even how to eat, how to sit on their chairs when they eat, how to ask for the salt. Everything is regimented and challenged so that a cadet who would just say, sir, I have a question, wouldn't be allowed to ask that question. They would have to formulate it in the language of the academy.
Self-expression sort of disappears.
To a degree that you cannot even imagine. During that first phase of basic training, even when a cadet is alone with his roommate in the room together, they're not allowed to sit down or speak to each other. And so, yeah, exactly. It is, everything is regimented, and anything that you came in thinking about your individual judgment and how that matters is pretty much trashed psychologically through that process.
So those are some of the kind of psychological rigors. And then there are physical rigors that these cadets have to go through in what are called first and second beast. Tell me a little bit about the physical rigors.
Well, the cadets are getting by on very little sleep usually, and there's physical training at pretty much every turn. From the moment they wake up, they get 30 seconds to shower to get ready for the day. So when a few cadets are running late, everybody goes down and does push-ups or something called flutter kicks, you know, where they're kicking their feet 6 inches from the ground, lying on their backs. And all of this is to kind of get them ready for the more intense training that they face in Jack's Valley, in a way. The interesting thing also about the physical training is that in the kind of culture of the academy, the upperclassman who's training them has to be able to do whatever they're imposing on the newcomers. They have to be able to do it right alongside them. It's considered bad form to say to the cadets 50 push-ups unless you're doing those push-ups alongside them.
You mentioned Jack's Valley there. That's an area for training that's near the Air Force Academy.
It's actually on the academy grounds, and it's a couple miles from where the dorms are, and it's boot camp for them, basically.
The training becomes so intense that some students can't even escape it when they're sleeping. And I wonder if you would read a paragraph for us from the book about this.
Great. Okay. So deeply does the academy reach into their psyches that it is not uncommon for the cadets to rise in their sleep, imagining themselves in the throes of some training exercise. The incidents go well beyond talking or walking in their sleep, and the cadets do not usually wake up. It is as if phantoms of the new people being born inside them seep out at night to have their say and are then sucked back into sleep.
That image just stuck with me from the book. And the book we're talking about on Colorado Matters today is Skies to Conquer, A Year Inside the Air Force Academy. Its author is Diana Shemo. You know, like a lot of military institutions, the Air Force Academy is something of a closed society with, as you've already described it, some arcane rules and traditions. Was it difficult as an outsider to make sense of all that you were seeing, even to kind of get through some of the vocabulary of it all?
The vocabulary wasn't so difficult. I love language, and so I found the vocabulary sort of revealing and fun in that way, sort of the way a puzzle is. The culture itself, I think, was difficult for me because I don't come from a military background at all, and so it was so different from any college that I'd ever seen. I mean, these are cadets who are 4 weeks out of high school for the most part. It was so different from anything I'd ever seen that it was almost like visiting a foreign country.
And were you given complete access? I mean, I have to say that reading the book, you do seem to be everywhere and in rather intimate moments.
Well, actually, I had asked for complete access. I had asked for unfettered access, and the Academy was not comfortable granting that. They said that they couldn't do that after 9/11. And so the compromise that we sort of reached was they would have somebody with me, but that person would just need to keep me within their eyesight, ostensibly for security reasons, but would not have to sit in on interviews. And for the most part, they kept to that.
Was there something you wanted access to that you didn't get?
It's funny. I actually kept asking if they would, would mind introducing me to some cadets who were not Christian. I was following a specific squadron, Squadron 13, and I kept saying, well, is there a Jewish cadet, for example, that I could interview? Because I hadn't met any Jewish cadets in Squadron 13, but I thought there must be some. They kept not introducing me to a Jewish cadet, and eventually I learned that it was because there weren't any Jewish cadets in Squadron 13, and so I started to search a little farther afield.
I imagine that part of your interest in that is because there had been a scandal at the Air Force Academy, allegations that evangelical Christians, some in leadership positions, were engaged in proselytizing. But before that, mm-hmm. you'd covered the 2003 sexual assault scandal at the Academy. A group of women alleged that they'd been raped and then punished by higher-ups when they reported the assaults. On those two fronts, how had things changed by the time you went back in 2006?
To start with the religious issue, in 2006, there were no more emails that ended with biblical salutations, for example. Biblical quotes were common previously, both from cadets to each other and from faculty and from officers. So that was not there anymore. They were no longer, there's a picture in the book of a Christmas greeting that ran in 2003, which was signed by some 300 faculty and their spouses and other staff at the academy, officers. The dean's faculty was there, and that was saying, "Jesus is the way, come ask me about it." And it was a sort of openly proselytizing ad signed by the people who would be in charge of cadets' grades and much else in their lives. So that was gone. The most egregious instances of religious bias had been eliminated by the time I got there. And so it was less overt. But there was still, and there are still some things there that critics would say very closely skirt the line between separation of church and state. They do have Bible classes on Monday evenings. And, you know, that's an open question of whether a service academy paid for by taxpayers should be opening its space to outside groups for Bible studies. Some of those outside groups actually talk about training missionaries for Christ. On the sexual assault issue, it was very hard to say because I didn't see any direct instances of sexual assault in the squadron that I was covering. They had opened new avenues for reporting. What was really jarring about the allegations of 2003, as you noted, wasn't that women had been raped, because that happens on civilian campuses as well. It was the whole power structure that made the victims feel doubly vulnerable, because when they were reporting what happened, they would get punished. And the people who were doing the attacks, the assailants, were often the people who were in charge of training them. The dualies, female dualies, were disproportionately represented among the victims. And so that, by the time I was there, I didn't hear any allegations from cadets that, gee, when I was attacked and I went to report it, I'm the one who's, you know, doing tours, you know, marching in circles as punishment. That's what I heard, you know, in 2003, but I didn't hear that in 2006.
One of the things you write about is the changing nature of the Air Force itself. You know, military bombers and fighter planes are increasingly being replaced by drones, unmanned planes. They've been in the news a lot lately, of course. And mm-hmm. yet most cadets dream of becoming pilots. And I wonder, is the Academy preparing students for an Air Force that just doesn't exist anymore, or looks a lot different?
I think the year that I was there, that was certainly true. They were not on top of the changes. They were trying to catch up with them. Now, this year, they're starting to stand up a unit for unmanned drones. And so I think that now they are kind of getting a little bit more in tune with where technology is taking them, whether they like it or not. But the dream that actually draws cadets to the academy is not of controlling a drone from a computer terminal somewhere. That is really sort of the antithesis of what they dream of. They dream of manning a flying fortress, in a sense, and seeing the world from miles up high.
Diana, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Diana Shemo is the author of Skies to Conquer, A Year Inside the Air Force Academy. She joined us from the studios of National Public Radio in Washington, D.C.